Welcome to Spiritually Fierce, the podcast. I am your host, Dr. Ricky Jane Adams, principal and founder of the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence and creator of the Spiritually Fierce movement. Spiritually Fierce is not just a phrase. It is a movement of awakening consciousness of which we are all a part, if we want to be. In each episode, we'll explore what it means to be spiritually fierce, how to become it, and why it is the revolution in consciousness that will save the world. Join me and my fierce guests for deep conversations on spirituality beyond the trinkets and superstitions of the new age that will support you to increase your power to serve. Welcome back, everybody, to season two of Spiritually Fierce, the podcast, and my very first in-person interview with the gorgeous Ivy McKenna, who I had the privilege of meeting. I actually met you online, first of all. I joined a class online during lockdown before I'd even moved to this side of town. So I was living north side, but I knew where I was coming to and I wanted a yoga studio. So I thought, I'll jump online. And I found you and I did a class and fell in love. And then, of course, now live 160 meters away from Liquid Room on in Bayside, Melbourne, where we are. And you are the glorious owner of that yoga studio and really a health and well-being mecca, I think. It's more than just one thing. It's many things. So thank you and welcome to the podcast couch. Now I know I have one.
How exciting, you know. I don't often have the opportunity to share because we're, you know, as business owner, we're always so busy just taking care of things, taking care of what's around you and staff and clients. So, you know, time to sort of talk about what you do is not often what you would say that it's something that you get an opportunity to do because you don't work with a team of, you know, someone that work at the same level as you. Owners are a very lonely kind of role.
It really is.
And also when you're a small business, you're it. You do everything. So
Well, I think you are such a beautiful, fascinating character and I love being led by you in yoga and I love our, you know, impromptu chats at the studio.
Oh, thank you.
And you are, you're an incredibly compelling human being, but we talked about a little bit before we started recording. There's also been a lot in the last 2 years. As I said, I've been practicing with you, you know, pretty much through lockdown. So we've spent more time online than in person. No. So I'm really interested in unpacking a lot of that, your identity as well as being a business owner in the world, as well as an Asian woman in Australia, you know, lots of intersections. But let's begin with, how did you get here? How did you end up running Liquid Room?
Oh my gosh. This is It's quite an interesting transition because I've always grown up in the mindset that there's something I really want to do and offer to community, but I always have been driven towards the advocacy side of things. But I've never stuck through it enough because I've got so many sort of personal responsibility and family responsibility that's always tying me back to being back into the city or being in a new city with someone, a family. So the advocacy side of things never really, but it's always burning inside me, you know? I feel a deep connection to Asia, you know, even though I was born in Asia, but I grew up very sort of westernized, being in Canada. And my mom being an Asian woman, she also liked to let go of her Asian identity and just adapt herself into the Western culture. So everything I grew up with in food and society and, you know, I was probably one of the few Asian person in a school I used to go to. So everything for me is jump into English, jump into the language, jump into the society, the culture, you know. So for me, I've adapted it a lot of open arms, you know, and probably you have no choice as well. You get thrown into things. So for me, there's always this burning desire to go back to Eastern philosophy, which I think I found when I discovered yoga quite a number of years back. This is back in 2015. I didn't discover it as a practitioner. You know, I trained as a teacher. But I've been a practitioner probably back in year 2000, when it was just like one of those gym and you know, this Indian guru, and it's only about five or six of you, you know, and it's
Wow,
just throwing flour in the air and breathe and bow
yeah.
forward, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's all anatomy, it's all fancy, it's all
Yeah.
gymnastic, dance, all that incorporation of
Yeah.
functional movements.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of that have brought me to a point where when I, after I have children and being a home mom, and I was also married to someone who have high anxiety issues and addiction issues, that I needed to find something that will anchor all of us.
Yeah.
And when I discovered float, after I finished my yoga teacher training, I just thought, this is it. I couldn't find anything better than going into float, which maybe some of you don't know what that is.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so flotation is, you go into a room that's, you know, filled with 650 kilogram Epsom salt water, well, the salt in the water. And the idea is you step into this room and you become weightless. You're floating with the density of the water being that high,
Yeah.
so your body can just completely let go.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing it in complete silence as well, and you have the options of letting all the lights be switched off, which some people do, some people don't. But the idea of that sensory deprivation, to me, was just incredible. You know, I mean, I'm an only child, but I grew up around a lot of people, cousins, and community, and I was never, say, alone.
Yeah.
So I grew up in compact spaces and
Yeah.
small rooms, and we're all on top of each other. So the idea of finally having that, wow, going into a room in silence and no light, it really intrigued me. So when I
Yeah.
first experienced it, that moment was like a light bulb. I was like, I finally found what I believe is, you know, something that everyone needs.
Yeah.
And literally within 3 days, I had a business name. Within 6 months, I had a venue, and then a year after
Wow.
that, well, 6 months after following that, you know, after fit outs, everything, Liquid Room was born.
Wow.
It was never born with the intention of running a yoga studio.
Wow. Okay.
On a business perspective, I find yoga studios, it's very difficult business
Yeah.
to sort of upkeep,
Yeah.
because the cost of rent and based on square footage,
Yeah.
especially in Australia, is very high.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a natural thing for me to incorporate yoga studio, because the space that I have at Liquid Room is quite massive.
Yeah.
So it was a no-brainer for me to put all that elements together.
Wow.
Yeah, so
Gosh, there's so many questions I have in there, but so effectively, this is where the advocacy comes in because you experienced float after doing your teacher training, and instead of what most of us do, which is like, I'll just keep having floats and doing yoga, you're like, I need to create a space where other people can experience this. Yeah,
Absolutely.
you're like, I
Yeah.
have to give
It
it
was,
to.
that's right.
Yeah,
It was just
yeah,
immediate, you
yeah.
know? It was just something like, if I were going to share something, this is an experience that I think doesn't matter who you are, what you do, where you come from, you step in there and your whole identity can just disappear.
Yeah.
And you're just there, and you're
Yeah.
just there to experience yourself.
Yeah.
And that's very challenging, you know? Not
Yes.
everyone can actually sustain that or recognize that as a benefit.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, you know, learning, there's a lot of conversation with clients, there's a lot of educating as well, but there's a lot of personalization at the start of a journey.
Yeah.
So, but I love people.
Yeah.
But if you're not in a business of loving people, it's
Then
really
yeah.
hard to upkeep something like this,
Yeah.
because you'll run out of juice,
Well, you're really the priestess of your temple, to use the language that I would use, because that space is a healing space. It's where people come, sometimes probably unknowingly, to seek out not just a physical support, but their soul is yearning for something deeper. And your space is a safe space for people to come and do that. And you create that energy. It's tangible when you walk in there. It feels like a place where you can heal. And in all the ways that I mean that, not just physically, but emotionally, mentally, spiritually. And that comes down to whoever is setting the tone, which of course is you.
Oh,
So,
thank you.
yeah.
Yeah, and it was a very interesting process, because initially, when you first come up with the name of this place, you know, everyone asked me, oh, is it something something yoga? Is it something something massage? Is it something something flow? And I said, no, I don't want to attach
Yeah.
any specific to a place. I just want it to be
Yeah.
a space that feels, you know, anything can happen underneath that space, But the space needs to feel that they're holding that space for people. They're, people feel like when they walk in, they're being held. I'm not going to be the mother or the savior.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you walk into a space that you feel like I can just not bring anything outside of this space, and I can feel comfortable enough for me to just be vulnerable, then I think, you know, I've achieved what I wanted to achieve through my mission.
Yeah.
You know, my mission statement was creating a space for people to be able to walk in, drop in, and feel like they can actually process something without judgment, you know, without being told, this is what's wrong with you. You know, I say there's enough therapists out there or information out there, people, you know, being told how they need to think, how they need to feel, or what's wrong with them. This is how I'm going to fix you. You know, liquid room was, you know, the name itself, I really want it to be liquid, comes from that ripple effect. I believe in ripple effect. I believe in the fluidity of liquid and how the energy flows from one to another. It doesn't matter, you know, who you are and whether you just drop in today or you've been here for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the room is the room. It's a space.
Yeah.
You know, the room is the room that you create for yourself.
Yeah.
The vastness of space is up to you. Your mind is limitless.
Yeah.
Your emotions are limitless. So when you come into a space, you're not bound by what's, you know, what the walls are. You're bound by your own perceptive and perception. So, that's where I, you know, I always feel that when I go in, even for myself, when I lose a bit of my own way, because I get caught up in the business side of things, as soon as I walk in there and I'm just in that operation mode and interacting with clients, it gives me fulfillment, you know, it gives me that fulfillment of sense of purpose once again.
Absolutely.
Especially the last 2 years we've had.
Yes. And so much of what Liquid Room offers, of course, was not possible for people to access during the lockdowns here in Melbourne, where we're located. We had the longest, harshest lockdown of anywhere in the world, and at the time when we probably needed that the most. But I want to ask then, so, you know, it was a pretty split second decision then, yes, I'm going to start this business. Had you owned businesses before? Were you a business owner?
No, I was a floater, like, to use the term lightly, not the floater in the sense of float therapy, but I was one of those people that, you know, since I was very young, I like to experience many different things. I would do something for 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, I went to uni, I studied computer science, I did my stint in IT, but then when I graduated, I wanted to join the circus. And that didn't work out because I didn't have any talent at all. I thought I could just be a ticket person, so Cirque du Soleil would hire me. I went nuts applying everywhere. But, you know, and then I went outdoor for a while and I backpacked for about 8 months and I ended up in Europe, ended up in Asia. And I've never known myself as something that I just have to be stationary, you know, and I have to do this or I have to be that. When this whole process came about, I thought to myself, there's an element of grounding that I need for myself, you know? So when I discovered flow, that was probably the most grounding experience I've ever had.
Wow.
So it was never something that I go, wow, you know, I'm a business owner, but I've always been self-driven enough to create a path for myself.
Yeah.
So there is an entrepreneurship in that attitude.
Yes, absolutely.
So for me, it's like, okay, if I want to go there, I got to make money. How am I going to make money? So I got to do this. You know, I got to make myself known. So it's like selling yourself without realizing that you're doing sales.
Yeah.
You know, I've had various jobs, you know, but various jobs that probably instead of thinking myself as an employee, I always think of myself as a problem solver.
Yeah.
So then that drove me into even more hungry to create something for myself.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you speak to any entrepreneur, small business owner, they all have that, you know, unexplained fire to go, I want to do this. I want to do this. There's that, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, some people's going, oh, I want this job because I'm not sure, or I want this role because I'm not sure. For yourself, you know, you are where you are because there's that inner fire that you go, I want to do something.
Yeah.
or whether it's A, B, or C.
Yeah.
So it's been in me.
Yeah.
Therefore, when I decided to run a business like this is the first time I ever created anything from scratch, from
That's
zero.
amazing.
There's no model for float
Yeah.
or a center with float massage, yoga, all put together. You just draw on all the experiences you've had. That's the beauty about being sort of adaptable and,
Yeah.
you know,
So tell us then, for me as a business owner, the last 2 years have been, super challenging, but as an owner of a physical in-person business, what has been the biggest challenges and the biggest opportunities out of this?
I think my biggest challenge really was trying to figure out what do I need to do not to lose clients?
Yeah.
Because the first thing people are going to think, the doors close, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'll save money
Yeah.
because I'm not getting the value.
Yeah.
So immediately my thought was, how do I save my client? How do I keep them engaged to
Yeah.
stay with me, stay trusting
Yeah.
with me? I think people love to see when a business or someone they have entrusted a part of themselves to, that they act in a way that they feel safe, like the whole safetiness. You know,
Yeah.
safe doesn't have means that, you know, I'm here for you to have a shoulder to cry on. Safe can just feel that I don't need to ask, you already know what I need.
Yeah.
So when the whole lockdown was starting to be in conversation, I have already incorporated all that safety measures
Yeah.
and acting on it, even though people weren't comfortable. You
Yeah.
know, like the whole hand sanitizing requirements at first, and you know, not allowing people that actually are coughing or
Yeah.
sneezing, you know, if you'd be asked to leave, you know, all of that before. There's a lot of play, you know, a lot of like no legislation around
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
So I think that set the tone
Yeah.
that I was serious about
Yeah.
acting early, even though a lot of people were still very,
Yeah, blasé
this is
and
not a big deal. We're in Australia. It's not going to come here. You know, it came really, really fast, right? I'm talking about 3 to 5 days. So just that 3 days of advance decision, and it was a risk. It was a risk that, you know, we're in a spiritual space. We're in an open space. So you get a lot of people going, but I still want to hug. I still want to, you know, we should be whoever way and however way we want. Here I am setting the restrictions early without even, you know, needing to yet. But that was a risk that I was willing to take because I felt that the most vulnerable needed to be protected. The most vulnerable in terms of their mindset as well, the fear. Because the fear is going to kick in when everything kicks in. So that was stage one. And then the hardest thing was trying to figure out how to financially support your business because the center still requires rent to be paid. You're on a lease. You got staff. So my biggest worry is losing my staff. So all my staff feeling that they're unsupported. So the next thing I did very quickly is rather than saying no yoga classes, no nothing, I called a meeting and said, don't worry, none of you are being let go. So I have created strategies to make sure that the members continue to stay. I provided incentive so the paying customer kept going. And the yoga teacher, I decided not running on-demand classes all live. So then they get paid to teach on camera. So basically, most of my teacher, except the ones that decided that they are happy not to, or they couldn't. And so we kept that going. So that was stage two. And that was really challenging because equipment, technology, you know, me having my technology background, thank God. See, you never know what you learn in the past. You really, you know, call upon is being called upon. So that was really challenging. So my goal was to maintain my staff, and I did that. So I met my second goal. So client number one goal was my staff. And then how do I keep the revenue going? You just got to be creative, you know? And I sat down, really thought about my worst case. And my worst case is everyone quit, everyone leave, and I have to close. And that could be a reality. But in me, that fear, I had to accept that. I think you have to accept your worst case in order for you to take risks and move
yeah,
on.
yeah, I love that.
And I always said, you always evaluate your worst case, sit on it and go, yeah, if that's the worst, I'm still gonna do it.
Yeah.
You accept it, you keep going.
Yeah.
Otherwise you accept it and you take your losses now and you just cut yourself away cleanly.
Yeah.
Because if you don't accept your worst case, and it's a calculated, yeah, you know, activity and exercise.
Yeah.
You can't make the right decision to move forward.
Yeah.
So that's been probably my base philosophy.
I love that. Yeah. And I totally agree. And I think it's that idea of putting your head in the lion's mouth, right? Like, go towards the thing that scares you most, yeah, see what happens in your mind, and then you can do anything. You can prepare for anything. And look, anecdotally, a number of your yoga teachers have shared with me that you were hands down the best studio for them during the lockdown. Oh, that you actually were thinking about their well-being as much as anybody else's. And I really want to reflect that to you, because I know that being a yoga teacher in the world is not an easy task. They're usually not entrepreneurial. They're usually going from one studio to the next and teaching, yeah, for an hourly rate or per student. And yeah, that what was reflected is you really made it easy for them to stay loyal to you, and you know that you were invested in them as people, not just, you know, as a way to deliver a class, but actually as individuals as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And I think it was really important, because you got to think that, you know, there's also that philosophy that I've been really, really learning, is the whole idea of impermanence. Because we tend to get caught up in, oh my God, this is not working out. It's the end. This, yeah, will end it all, you know? And I always leave room for, this is not going to last forever, you know, this hardship, this shutdown, at some point, everyone needs to come back. I don't want myself to come back all like flat and depressed and unmotivated. I want them to come back, ready to come back, yeah, you know, so to keep them motivated throughout is for them to give them a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
As much as it gives the yoga community or even my other clients who are float clients and massage clients who have no physical interaction whatsoever with us, but equally, because, you know, they are stationary in you know, in my perspective as my client, not being able to come in, I also offer them other opportunities to be engaged, you know, whether it is engaging through breath work or whether engaging through sound bath online, yeah, or I'll send them tracks that they, yeah, can actually listen, and I'll package salt so that they can take it home for them to, yeah, enjoy the salt, even not the weightlessness, yeah, yeah, but at least the therapy of the magnesium, yeah, and the Epsom salt. So those little touches is so important for them, yeah, to feel like, oh, I'm not forgotten.
Yeah.
Or I actually matter. I actually, yeah, you know, and then in return, they were just so amazingly supportive towards the business and myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even on a personal level, I get messages sent to me going, how are you going, and,
aww,
what can I do, and is, yeah, there anything, and they'll either recommend people or recommend ideas. It was, yeah, a very collaborative environment. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as hard as things were, I felt supported.
Yeah,
you know, I, yeah, really did, you, yeah, know, and I really did feel like there was a sense of community.
Yeah.
In a place where it's hard not to be selfish.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about, as soon as you get that connection, you could be at risk of being sick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, or if you break the rule, you're subjected to a huge fine, or, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that would really separate us at the time, including, yeah, the fundamental reason why we're locked,
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very glad that my staff, they, you know, there were days where they were just like, oh, I'm so tired, I don't feel like teaching. I'm like, you feel better after you teach.
Yes.
You,
yes,
do, and you know you do.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they show up.
And do it. Yeah.
That's it.
Service is always the answer.
Yeah.
Tell me that about what you've observed now. We're out of lockdown. Obviously, the focus globally has moved away from the pandemic, even though we know it still exists in the world. We're no longer asked to check in. We're no longer asked to wear masks. We're no longer asked to do anything, but, yeah, even though it's still around. What have you observed about your clients and your students since all of that change?
Yeah, well, you know, when I first started the business, it was mainly, we have a lot of discussion with clients that comes out of that 1 hour float or even after a class. And oftentimes, you know, the conversation can go from very light to very deep, but it takes time to nurture that conversation.
Yeah.
Post-lockdown, there was so much emotions.
Yeah.
You know, there was so much exhaustion, but there was so much anger at the same time.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people were feeling those emotions. They don't know how to process it.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in the business that you are, being spiritually intuitive, it's not natural for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because it requires a lot of discomfort, a lot of working through things that, or even acknowledging things that you probably don't really want to. Because
yeah.
I believe when you experience certain level of trauma in your past, trauma is meant to be forgotten. But if you experience repeated trauma, it sticks to you in some ways and alters how you are in the future. So when you have that period of silence and withdrawal and non-activity,
yeah,
stuff comes up that you don't want to come up,
yeah,
that you've forgotten for years. So we're dealing with a lot of that right now. We're dealing with people that are ready. We're dealing with people that are not ready. We're dealing with people that are using it in all sorts of different ways. We're also dealing with people that probably don't really know how to emotionally process things, you know, because they've always done it at such a surface level. But when you have such a deep bringing up of everything, it goes so deep, the surface doesn't meet the depth.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes fear, anger, anxiety. So then you're dealing with a society of that right now. So there's, you can't define it right now.
Yeah.
That's a challenge. Running a business right now, there is no, you know, if you come from a marketing background, segmentation, there is no segmentation.
Yeah.
There's just, what is your product going to do for other people? You just got to bank on that.
Yeah.
You just got to bank on the service and you trust your service that someone out there is going to need it.
Yeah.
But if you want to define who that person or that profile of that person right now, it's really hard.
Yeah.
There's no routine. Routine is just starting to come back.
Yeah.
A lot of marketing is based around people's work culture.
Yeah.
That's people's lifestyle is a piggyback of their work culture. That work culture of 9 to 5, weekday versus weekend is all out the window.
Yeah.
So then it throw businesses out the window because public holidays, it's the same as weekend. Weekend is the same as weekday. Monday is the same as Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's challenging.
Yeah.
Because we cannot create a pattern so that we can predict what happens 3 months later.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of business very nervous, especially small businesses. You know, we tend to carry 3 months or 6 months planning or a year or 5 years. Small business, we can't afford that right now. Because anything we carry further than 3 months, we could see a big loss.
Yeah.
And we may not be able to shoulder that.
Yeah.
So it's really, I would say right now, it's probably the most challenging, time for business to come back.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But it depends on what you do.
But I think you're right. It's people. I mean, it's not just that we can't predict how our clients are going to behave. I think individuals don't know how they're going to behave. You know, people don't know what they want or need anymore. And in some ways, that's good because I think a lot of what we did and the ways we behaved previously weren't necessarily serving us. So there's more truth. And as you say, raw emotion at the surface now, but it makes people very unpredictable and it makes them very inconsistent. And neither of those things are good.
They're not good for planning. You can't, you know, I've avoided doing any major marketing since Christmas.
Yeah.
Because we're bound by policies as well as legislation, as well as rules of COVID still. And being in state of Victoria, I mean, we're also different again. You know, I don't think anyone realized, even across the world, I've got friends in Canada and US, they have no idea how it was being locked down. You know,
No.
individually, we're probably locked down for about 260 somewhat days, but my kind of business was locked down for probably for almost 290 days in
Yeah,
total.
absolutely.
So no one can fathom
No.
that degree of inactivity.
Yeah. And just the mental toll of keeping yourself as a business owner inspired to keep going when really, like, everyone's like, oh, I'm just going to chill and watch TV with my kids or whatever. And I'm like, I can't. I'm working harder than I've ever worked, but for less profit but I have to work harder to engage. And yeah, I that isolation of what we experience in Victoria, I'm not sure anyone ever will be able to understand
No.
what we went through.
Exactly.
And maybe that's good because I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. But yeah, I would love to know what your brand of spirituality is. Like, what did you lean into within yourself to get through those dark times?
Yeah, for me, it was dark because I went through homesickness at one point, and I thought I needed the experience of home.
And where is that?
You know, I had to dig deep for that because I come from a background where there's a lot of chaos, you know, and I come from a background where I didn't grow up with both my parents, and my parents are both in two different cities, you know, and I've been away from where I initially grew up, you know, which is where I probably call home more, which is Canada, which is where my mom and my stepdad is. But I've been away since year 2000.
Wow.
You know, I haven't been back home.
Wow.
So home, I had to redefine what home is, and I didn't ever have to think about it.
Yeah.
And so COVID was a real, real realization for me to sort of come back to, where is that feeling where I feel safe? I myself need to feel safe. I mean, I'm doing all these things to make other people feel safe and comfortable.
Yeah.
And that was a hard thing. And it comes down to feeling safe within myself.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds so cliche, but at the end of the day, I had to reflect on where can I comfortably sit within myself to find the home? It won't be a physical place. You know, because where I was, where I am now, you know, at the time it was also impermanent, right? And I know I've got my children, you know, I am a single mom. I've got two girls who are equally going through all this pandemic that every parent's been talking about, all the challenges of mental health and whatnot, emotional health. So I also have to be careful that, you know, I'm not holding a place for everyone else that I wasn't holding a place for them.
Yeah.
So I had to redefine my home as being the connection that I actually have now, which is my daughters and, you know, my staff, amazingly. Some of my staff have become quite good friends with me. And my beautiful partner, who was really supportive, you know, while I was doing 22 hours of filming and editing and running the business, trying to survive. It was the most hours I've ever worked for about 4 to 6 weeks straight. You know, he was really there for my daughters, you know, for my girls. So that was when it hit me, you know, home was the where I was nostalgic about. I want to go back to that safe space without all these chaos.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back and just go, when I was at home, my mom cooked for me. Da, 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 da. And then I realized that that's not real. That's the past.
Yeah.
You know, what's real now is the home that you experience is the home where you feel the most love.
Yeah.
And it was with my children and with the friends that I have and with my very partner, you know. So, yeah, so that was my big learning was finding, you know, being that, you know, moved around for so much. It was, you know, I never asked myself, where is home?
Yeah.
You know,
it
just kept changing, you know.
Yeah. And you're right, that really archetypal experience, I think, for so many people, because the pandemic meant travel was off the cards, that even if you had wanted to go home physically to Canada to be with your mum, you couldn't. And then that brings up that internal journey that you went on, which I think for so many people, they wouldn't have known to go on that journey and probably just went into emotional crisis because how they didn't have the tools that you have to
Yeah.
navigate that. I'm really curious then of what brought you to Australia, and are you planning to stay here? I mean, it's
Yeah.
20 plus years now.
20 plus years. And so I was traveling on my own, and then I ended up in Spain, where that was the moment where I realized I'm running out of money. And then I have a beautiful college friend that was teaching out in Singapore. And she was teaching at a college where they were looking for international teachers. And not necessarily qualified professor, just graduates that can come in and actually influence, create a Western influence, I guess, or bring in some kind of Western teaching. So at the time I approached her and I said, look, I'm really looking for work because I don't want to go home. I'm not ready to go home. Again, the word home, right? I see home as also an anchor, but also equally something I don't feel like I have the freedom. So she said, oh, they're looking for teachers, and I end up teaching in Singapore, and that's where I met my ex-husband, which is a father of my children. And his background is from Sydney, and we'll both stay there for about a year and a half. And that was a time where we thought, as much as we love the experience of being in Singapore, I think Singapore runs on a very different mindset. Things is not what it always seem. On surface, everything looks great, and then when you dig through the layer, there's a lot of different ideology that it just wasn't sitting comfortable with me anymore. So I thought it's time for us to make a move, but I don't want to go home still, you know? And so I said, if you got something to think about that you need to do, then I'll follow. So that's what happened. I followed him to Australia, and we both were new in Melbourne. And then we did live in US for a few years, where my first daughter was born. And then I came back. But the funny thing is, before my first daughter was born, I never felt Melbourne was home. It took a long time to adjust. And I did have a little bit of a side story with Australia. When I was 11, I went to school in Sydney for 2 years. And unfortunately, that was the worst time because I experienced a lot of racism then. So I pretty much begged my parents to let me go back to Malaysia for a bit,
Okay, so
which is
they
where
were in
my.
Malaysia at the time and they sent you to Australia to go to
No,
school.
they took me with them
Oh,
to Australia, yeah, to Sydney.
And they wanted you to have that schooling here, but it
Absolutely.
was, yeah.
Yeah,
And
it was really bad
so coming
experience.
back then as an adult woman to Melbourne, I'm talking about that idea of trauma that, obviously reactivated some of that for you.
Absolutely. And there was a lot of instances where it was still quite raw, when I was in Singapore, a lot of my expat international teacher friends were all like, we're going to Australia for a month, come. I'm like, nah, I'll never set foot in that country again. It was a bit traumatizing for me. It was a really hard road. But there was good memories too, but mostly it was just like society didn't really accept me, at the time. And it wasn't because I didn't give it a go. I did everything I could to learn the language, to, I played in the netball team, I played for the school, I was in the choir, I was, all kinds of stuff. But it was just like every time I thought, oh, I'm in, I'm not in. I'm in, I'm not in. I think a lot of immigrants for a while feel like that in any of the Western country. And I think now coming back, when I came back in year two, what year did I come back? Year 2002. I was a little bit apprehensive, but I think I gave it a good go as well. But a lot of things didn't happen well either. It was September 11th, dot-com crashed. So employment was pretty hard in the IT sector. That's what I was coming back for. I was kind of moving here for. And so there was a lot of things that stack against you. A lot of discomfort again, And then it wasn't until we made a move to US, which is Ann Arbor, is one of the most liberal college town, home of U of M, that I go, what a breath of fresh air. Then when I had my first daughter and came back, you had that community to step back in because you're mother now. So there's that identity. It's really hard for people to identify as a woman when you are your mother, are you a wife, are you a girlfriend, are you a daughter, are you a student,
Yeah.
are you a this prof are you a teacher, are you I came in not being anything.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, I didn't have my family here. Oh, I wasn't married. I was still an immigrant. I came on a work holiday visa. So, but what I identify with at the time was an IT
Yeah.
person, was like at the bottom of the barrel, you know?
Yeah.
So then you go, oh my God, what do I do now? You know?
Yeah.
So hospitality was always my saving grace.
Yeah.
In service business, you know? So that's why for me it's so nice. It's just always been something I can fall back onto.
Yeah.
So for me, I see Liquid Room as another business of service.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would fall into more category of hospitality and then wellness, to be honest,
Yeah.
because it's about people.
Yeah.
You
Yeah,
know, it doesn't
absolutely.
matter if you're the best masseuse and,
Yeah.
you know, best yoga teacher. If you can't connect with people, you know, you're not gonna make it, you know. So it is
Yeah.
still a hospitality business.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. What is it like now? Is there, I mean, for you and for your daughters, do you see and experience racism in that same way? Because I'm thinking about being that 11-year-old girl as well. You know, high school is such a vicious time anyway, and I'm not suggesting it was simply bullying because of the school environment, but do you think as a woman that you're more equipped to deal with it? Do you see your daughters impacted by racism in the way you were, or do you think there is a different culture now? You know, even Sydney versus Melbourne, it's a big question, but yeah.
Look, you know, I mean, you know, I always look at my daughters. They're half Asian, half Aussie.
Yeah.
So they're already halfway better than me. You know, like, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Like, they
yeah.
already have their opportunity set up for them because especially my eldest, she doesn't look Asian.
Yeah.
So she will never be identified as a
Yeah.
minority. She'll
Yeah.
always be part of the majority. Even though when you think about it, you know, I always say to my kids, you know, you go to Glen Waverley, you go to Springvale, you don't know that you're in Australia.
Yeah.
It's like being in Asia.
Yeah.
That's the dominant
Yeah.
race at the time, you know,
Yeah.
in that place. But for them, for me, is to explain to them that you have to remember that culturally, there is somewhere you need to be that you need to identify with. But at the same time, you also have to be open enough to recognize that that the conversation will change. You know, if you're a white person in Asia, that conversation changes as well. You know, you're a white person in Japan, that's another conversation.
Yeah.
Or you're an Asian person in Australia, or an Asian person in country Victoria.
Yeah.
That's a whole load of different conversation. But I think the important thing is you don't carry that with you. Like, I don't carry my minoritiness with me. I see that as it is a hurdle with certain things that I do, but I carry that confidence with me that I'm just as good as you are. That's it. There's no if or but or, you know, because I don't want to use that as an excuse why I get rejected. You know, I want to be rejected based on my merit. So if I don't think that way, then that won't happen. If that makes sense. Even
Yeah.
though if any element that does happen, I don't try to view it. I try not to view it as I got rejected because I'm a minority
Yeah.
or, you know, I will probably take a little bit more time to be seen, but once I'm there, I want my merits to hold that place. So then I don't even visit the whole racism as a reason why I didn't get certain things. So in that sense, I think it's very important for minority not to see themselves a minority. They have to start acting like part of the majority.
Yeah.
You know, it's very important because, you know, I watch my parents going, oh, I don't speak English well, blah, blah, blah. That's why I can't do this. And you're better because you got school and da, da, da. That stops you from even attempting anything.
Yeah.
And I've never seen myself as a minority.
Yeah.
I think I feel the racism, I feel it projecting towards me, but I just, whatever. You
Yeah.
know, like there's a whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You know,
Yeah.
doesn't matter if that's what I'm facing. I'm, you know, now own a business, you know, like I see many Chinese person own a business, I see many Asian minority, Indian, Filipino, Thai, all these people, you know, they're very successful what they do. They might be stereotyped, but who cares? Doesn't matter. Just do what you need to do.
Yeah.
If people think of you, that's why you become successful. Go for it.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. I think sometimes some racism is a benefit. At the same time, it is a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You know, but it is an opportunity to just, you know, not make that as an excuse why things doesn't work out as well. You know?
Yeah.
You know it's there, but you don't want to make it as a reason why things didn't work out for you.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah. So that's how I
manage
the situation. And my girls, I don't see that hurdle for them. I see the hurdle of them being a girl.
Yeah.
You know, being very emotional girls, a lot of conversation about that. But I talk to them more about being a female in society rather than being a female minority mixed race.
Yeah.
Because it's not an issue that I think needs to be focused on.
Yeah.
But they do pick on me because of my Asianness.
Yeah.
You know,
they do. In the way you parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, they'll pick on because. My English is not my first language.
Yeah.
So there's tenses that I use incorrectly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my biggest thing is singular and plural because it doesn't exist in the Asian language, you know. So they try to correct me and they do it by a very condescending way, you know. Like they're teaching me, you know. But oftentimes I don't react to it.
Yeah.
Because it's their ego. Children have a lot of ego.
Yeah.
So I just say to them is, hey, you know, it's fine that you correct me. I need correcting. You know, it's good. It helps me learn. You know, so it's almost like that exchange, you know.
And it is, unfortunately, the load of us parents is that our children think we're idiots.
Yeah.
And really don't know anything, regardless of what we've done.
Exactly.
Oh, Ivy, there's so much in there that I'm so grateful for you sharing. And I think, you know, more conversations. But I'd love to ask a few questions so we can get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah.
What is something that people misunderstand about you?
My strength.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think I had this conversation with my aunt the other day. She was telling me about her two children. She's got a very capable daughter who knew exactly what she needs to do, what she needs to plan, and how to solve problems. She's got a son who's just that free spirit, floating, very intelligent, but just got no gumph, you know?
Yeah.
She goes, I worry about him. I said to her, never worry about someone who's that free spirit because they've never ever get too upset or because they don't.
Yeah.
Because they're that free spirit.
Yeah.
I said, you should be more concerned about your older daughter.
Yeah.
Because she'll hold it together for so long, she won't know how to show you when she's not. And that's probably where I see most people misunderstand me.
Yeah.
Is, you know, as much as we see these strong women, because you have to make it in society with certain things that you do in career, we forget that there is a lot of that cushioning softness, there's a heart in there.
Yeah.
You know, so I get a lot of people going, don't worry, Ivy, you got this.
Yeah.
That you got this, you know. Though it makes me feel like sometimes, do you know when I don't got this?
Mm.
You know, do you actually see when I don't got this?
Yeah.
You know, so that's where I think we just have to be careful when you see people that are holding space, they are the strong women.
Yeah.
We forget that there are times they don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, there are times where they, you know, go to that layer of themselves that they can't climb out of it themselves, you know. So I think it's, I think that's probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
I'm sure you do too, right?
But you describe it so beautifully. And I think, I've read somewhere, you know, check on your strong friends because it's the ones who hold it together who won't be able to tell you when they need you and will, as you say, they'll fall the hardest. What are you reading right now?
The Four Agreements.
Oh, wow. It's a classic. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm in the second agreement.
Yeah.
So the first one is really, really challenging.
Yeah.
think for those, you know, I don't know if any of you have read it, I highly recommend it. Yeah. It's a good book to start on.
Yeah, it is.
If you're on a spiritual journey as well.
Yeah.
It just resets you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I highly recommend that.
And worth revisiting a lot. I think it's something you can't read too often.
Yeah.
If today was the last day on earth, what would you want us all to know?
About me or about anything?
Just what's your legacy? What is it that you want us to know about ourselves?
Yeah. I think it's very important for people to understand that we don't all are not only connected because we're born into something, you know? Just because you're born into it doesn't mean you have to be connected to it.
Yeah.
You know, identity is it's a very interesting thing. It can evolve.
Yeah.
You're not tied to what you're born into.
Yeah.
And I think that's what most people are being held back.
Yeah.
There is that belief system and value system that we get so locked into. And we don't know it either.
Yeah.
You know, there's a code that we're locked into just from growing up. And I think one thing I've learned is I don't often pick my loyalty because it's family. I pick my loyalty based on what's been done in the most thoughtful, caring way,
yeah.
You know? And so individual that I've met that, you know, really exemplify integrity, true integrity, not even strength, just integrity. You know, you don't need to be strong to have integrity.
Yeah.
Integrity comes from you really, really trusting yourself and really know yourself, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. So just form the identity that's important now.
Yeah.
Not what you were born into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
what I'll leave.
I love that. Love it.
There's a lot more.
I know. Well, you could write a book about it. And yeah. There's so many more questions that I have, but we'll leave it there for today. And hopefully we can do this again soon.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been such an honor to be asked.
Likewise.
And
I know.
The time and, you know.
In yoga class, you know, there's only so much time for catch up, but I'm so grateful to get to know you better and to really see the much more of the magnificence that you are.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, equally, I love to, you know, get to know you better and see you flourish in the area that you've been so great at. You know, I've heard so many great things about how you've helped so many individuals to discover their own spirituality.
Yeah.
And that fierceness, you know, that fearlessness as well. You know, I think women, we're all very bound by, you know, there's a nurturing side that we always go, we are the nurturer. Forget that there is that fierceness, you know, that we have to go beyond as well.
Yeah, so. We haven't forgotten that, you and I.
No. We still have it.
We can be the fierce nurturer. That's totally. That energy is very present. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining
us.
So much
listening.
Love to you all, and we'll see you next time. In 2022, the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence is bringing you a whole new way to get qualified as a professional intuitive. The Intuitive Intelligence Method Accreditation is a 100-hour training program including personal development, professional development, and spiritual development that will take your skills as an intuitive to the level of superconscious. This program is available online and in person across a range of different dates and deliveries in 2022 and 2023. We'd love for you to head to the instituteforintuitiveintelligence.com to find out more about how you can get qualified faster and more efficiently to increase your power to serve.